time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And just to give you an idea, this is one of these crazy weeks. I know every... You see, it's this crazy that I'm getting phone calls. Who is inconsiderate enough to call me at this... Where's 616? 616 is... Is that Michigan or something? You know, I'm not going to pick this up. I'm going to put it over there. Yeah. I'll show you. But just to give you an idea... Of how crazy it is, and it really is crazy. I know every week I say that, but we're going to give you evidence this week. Just to start with, this is the sound we have to deal with in the studio when the microphone is not on.
Yeah, you hear that?
We've got that siren going again. You know, we did this before, I think about a year ago, where we had the mystery siren going, and we don't know what it means. It's somewhere around here, so if anybody remembers what it means, I guess you're going to have to come by because we can't take phone calls. Please turn the thing off. It's just a comedy of errors around here. Okay, we've got that. We've got this. We've got all kinds of other things. It's really action packed. We have a special guest here this week joining us from Montreal, Fred.
Bonjour.
And you do speak that our language, not just that other thing.
Yes, I do. I speak Canadian English, American, and a couple of other
languages.
Doesn't
he speak English good?
I think he's
really, and you speak French as well.
C'est vrai.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. But Fred, you came down here and you made a bit of history because you brought something with you. And I think this might be something that maybe fellow USB staffers might be very interested in coming down and seeing while it's here for this hour. Yes, it's not in the studio, but it's here. And if you want to check it out, come on by before we leave here tonight at 7. You want to tell us what you brought with you, Fred?
Yes, it's called a smart car.
You brought a smart car to the United States. The thing I've been raving about for years is finally here.
That's right. It's a tiny little red car. It's about as wide as it is long.
Yeah, it's about the same. You can park in a parking space, head in, and you can pull right in, and you're not taking up any more space in the car's width coming out.
But what's amazing is once you get inside, there's lots of legroom. It's like a regular car. It's like a big car inside. I don't know how they do it, but
I don't know how they do it either. It's like some sort of space warping going on. You know, I don't understand that. It's big. It's bigger than my compact car on the inside, but on the outside, oh boy, it's certainly very tiny. Now we've been spending the last few days driving around New York City with this thing. And my God, I have to tell you, I have never in my life had any kind of reaction to anything I've ever done. I've done all kinds of bizarre, strange things. You know, some of them elicited smiles, some of them elicited anger, you know, but never, ever, 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 ever have I seen anything with this kind of a reaction. You want to describe what happens to us when we're driving down the streets?
Well, when I was driving down on Highway 87, I kept getting thumbs up and smiles and people turning their heads. Mm-hmm. It didn't stop. But what's amazing is when you stop the car, you cannot go about with, you can't go like 15 to 30 seconds without someone coming up to the car and talking to you.
Yeah.
Asking, you know, what kind of mileage does it get? Does it run on batteries? You know, mm-hmm. what is this
thing? Is this a scooter?
Yeah.
What is that? You know, one of the best things, we were driving up Park Avenue, and we just heard some guy at night just shout, "What the hell is that?" from the distance. And that's the kind of reaction you get. People astounded, flabbergasted. But most everybody is very happy to see it.
People are smiling, they're waving. I saw someone who was, it looked like he was having a bad day. You know, he had this kind of frown on his face, and mm-hmm. he was walking, looking down. Then he looked up at the smart car, and his smile started to grow on his face.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
represents what people's reaction.
It's bringing a bit of hope into their otherwise mundane lives.
That's right.
That's what we always have tried to do, but that we found that bringing a smart car into the country, that's the surefire way to do it. Mm-hmm. And as you know, this is something that I've been trying to do for a long, long time. And the problem is they don't sell them in this country. They sell them in your country. They sell them, I think, in just about every country, but they don't sell them here. I think your theory is that they don't use enough gas.
Well, I don't know what else it is, because it's a beautiful car.
Mm-hmm.
It works great. It handles the road perfectly. It costs $10 to fill. It works on diesel.
Actually, you're exaggerating. It costs $9 to fill.
I got it up to 10.
Did
I'm
you?
Sorry, but I got it up to 10.
Well, you must have really squeezed some in.
I did, 3 times.
I ran out of, well, I didn't run out of gas, but the gas light came on once for me so far. Now, I was a little scared when this happened, because this car takes diesel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else they don't allow in New York State, is to register a car that takes diesel. I'm not sure why, because this is very clean-burning diesel, but that's just a whole other thing. They have a gas version of this car as well, but I don't think they sell that in Canada. But anyway, I found out that I was, running low. In fact, it tells you how many liters you have left. That's another thing. It's a Canadian car, so it's all metric. I had 4.5 liters, so I knew about when I'd run out, if I did run out. But I was driving around Manhattan looking for a diesel station, and I was a bit perturbed that there wasn't one right away. Finally, somebody told me where to find one on 44th Street, I think. I went up there, and I filled the thing up with diesel, and it stopped. It stopped really soon. It stopped after about 3 gallons. So I clicked it again, and it stopped again. And I really thought it was, misreading, but no, that's all it takes. It takes 3.5 gallons, and it costs about $9, $10 to fill up.
When I tanked it in Canada before leaving, I was at half tank. It's a little more expensive in Canada. It cost me $9 for the half tank. But the guy who came to fill it up was amazed. He's like, he couldn't believe it. What? You came here just for, $10 worth of gas? You know?
What are you wasting my time for?
What's funny is you have to go to the diesel tank. And the diesel tank is usually apart from the other regular fuel tanks. And you have to go, where all the big trucks are.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is this car extremely small, tiny compared to other cars, you have to go where the huge trucks are. And this big area, and you see this tiny little car with this big tank right behind it.
Oh boy. Well, we've spent when did you come down? Thursday?
Yeah.
We've spent virtually every day since then doing something with the car, driving in some part of New York. Recently just brought it out here and gauging the reactions. We were on the expressway last night, a bunch of people swerving because they couldn't believe their eyes. No,
I think that's why it's very dangerous. People are staring. There's drivers who pass by the smart car, and they're actually looking at the smart car once they pass it. It's very dangerous for other drivers to be looking at the smart car.
And I've read accounts where accidents have been caused by people gawking at the things. Not with the smart cars, with other cars. Other innocent cars up ahead that don't see them coming. So, yeah, you do have to be careful if you do see the car around. Now, I should point out, I think we have the only smart car in Manhattan. I really do. And I also think we have the coolest car in Manhattan, because I've driven all kinds of things, but never before, even the 2600 van, never before have I had so many people just staring, running up, smiling, waving. Even policemen, they come up and say, "Hey, how can I get one of those things?" Everybody wants one. And I think this proves what we were trying to say over the past few years, that yes, these things can sell in this country. People do want fuel-efficient cars. They don't just want SUVs and minivans and garbage like that. It's, it's something that looks nice, it's something that rides well, something that gets really good mileage, and I think it's necessary. Yeah, you can't fit your family of, 8 in it, but maybe you don't always have to go somewhere in a vehicle with all those people. Maybe sometimes you just want to go around something local, you want to go with one or two people. It's appropriate for that. And it works in Europe. It works great in Europe. How is it in Canada?
Well, in Canada, it's pretty much the same as in New York. It handles the road very well, and we get the same reactions over there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of smart cars around. I've seen a couple. There's one right in front of my house that's always parked. You know, I've seen a couple swerve by. And when you have a smart car swerve by you, it's like this tiny little thing, you know, you get your leg out of the way as if a dog was running by you, you know. It's not a very scary car.
We were parking it in the East Village last night, and you managed to fit the thing into some really, really tiny spaces. Really tiny.
That's right. That's the thing about this smart car. Parking becomes, like, totally fun.
Yeah.
You start to look for the smallest possible parking spot because it becomes a challenge. It's how small a parking space can I fit this into?
Yeah.
You don't look for parking spots more than one or two streets away from where you are.
Yeah, and I found spaces in back of cars, the last car on the block. Sometimes there's a little bit of a gap between that and the crosswalk, and I've been able to squeeze it in many times there. And it's just so cool to be able to do that. And, of course, as you mentioned before, we can park head-in as well. I don't think that's legal. I think you'll probably get a ticket for something.
That's not legal in Canada. I don't think you've broken this ground yet in the U.S.
I intend to get a ticket for that. Only because, you know, I want to see what they write on the ticket. I want to be the first person to get a ticket for parking head-in with a tiny car. But something you did yesterday, you parked at a meter, except you were sharing a meter with another car.
That's right.
There was space between the car that had that meter and the car that had the meter behind it, and it was more than enough space for the car, but I'm sure that's breaking some kind of rules somewhere. How do you pay for that space? There's no way to pay for it.
Well, luckily it was after the parking meter was, you know, in operation.
We didn't have to fight that battle that time, but next time we might have to.
That's right, but it does take up a lot less space, and it will, if you start to seeing smart cars come into the U.S. Mm-hmm. and people buying them up, because I think they'll be very popular in the city because they're very useful. It's easy to get around. It's easy to park. And, you know, that's a Mercedes-Benz engine you got in there?
That's what I've been told. Mercedes-Benz manufactured.
If you can
things.
Find the engine in the car.
And that's another thing. You can hold the engine in your hand, it looks like. I mean, you know, to find it. I don't know. Should we spoil it and tell them where it is? It's really kind of a challenge to track
it down. I
don't know.
I think it's still a trade secret there.
Well, we found it, and we were looking at it, and it's unbelievable. It has a lot of power. People think it doesn't have power. How fast did you get that thing to go?
Well, that's it. You'll have to translate into miles. But going downhill, I've been told it goes up to 140 kilometers, because that's the maximum.
That's about 90, I think.
I guess so. But 140 kilometers is really fast. You're passing most cars on the highway if you do that.
Yeah, we were passing all kinds of people last night on the expressway.
That's right.
Trucks, cars, cops, a bunch of people. A lot of different people were just on the expressway.
And what's also interesting is it's manual and automatic.
That's the thing. Now, when I knew this car was coming, you told me it was it had the automatic option, and I was kind of bummed out by that because, you know, I don't really like automatic. I like standard myself. But when I saw the thing, I realized that it means what it says. It's an option. It doesn't have to be automatic. It can be either automatic or standard. How does that work?
It's a tiny little button that's on the stick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even the way you change gears isn't like a usual manual car. It's pretty much like a video game. Like, you know, when you go to arcades,
I
you
like
play
video
a
games,
car
yeah.
video
oh.
game. All you have is you have the neutral, or was it rear you call it?
Reverse,
and you have the plus and minus.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go up a notch, you go plus and you let go, plus, and or minus. So that's the way it works, basically. So if you want it manual, you just start the car. It's always in manual when you start it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in the city and you don't want to, you know, get a hassle with changing gears and things like that, just press this tiny little button, and it's an automatic. The car will shift gears for you.
Now, I think it shifts gears better when you're doing it standard.
Of course,
yeah,
definitely.
It seems to be a little lurchy when it's doing it automatic, but that's just me. You know, I prefer standard. I prefer having control
over it. No, that's right, because it does have a little bumpy ride. It's like you're teaching your little brother how to change gears. You know, you feel, you're rocking in your chair when it changes gears itself in automatic. You know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, yeah, it's a ton of fun just tooling around the city in this thing, and basically any way you want to go. It's something I hope we see a lot more of. Such a hassle getting it into the country. I mean, driving across the border is no problem at all, but actually
driving across the border is pretty much like driving into a toll booth. You get asked all sorts of questions about the car. Like, first of all, is it a car? does it run on batteries? No, it's diesel. And, where does it come from? Where is it made?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what is the answer to that? Where is it made?
Well, apparently it's made in France, mm-hmm. In a city right near Germany. I think, I forget the name of the city. Do you remember?
I'm thinking Lille for some reason, but I'm not sure if that's right. That might just be what I'm thinking.
I don't remember
of.
That. But anyhow, it comes from France, and they brought it by boat up to Halifax, and after that they brought it into Montreal.
By train. So by train or by truck or by something?
I think both. They brought it, you know, it's boat, train, and truck. It's just missing the airplane and would have pretty much everything there.
Yeah. And then you picked it up and brought it down.
That's right.
That was the easy part.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Definitely. Well, we're talking to Fred from Montreal, who has driven a smart car down into this country. Is it okay with you if I borrow the car for a little while?
You have to take real good care of it.
Okay.
Because it's a beaut.
I'll take better care of it than I would a human being. How about that?
I hope you're going to take good care of passengers, too.
You haven't seen the way I treat human beings, have you? Oh, well. we have, you brought some music with you from Montreal.
That's right.
Oh, and again, let me just point out, if we're here live on this Tuesday evening, June... They took the calendars away. June 13th, I think?
That's what I was going to say, but I haven't checked.
No, it might be the 14th. I think today might be the 14th.
It might be.
Well, anyway, whatever. We're here live, so if any USB people are in the neighborhood, step on the gas, get over here, take a look at the car, maybe even get a ride in it. It's pretty gosh darn
cool. You won't get to see one of these very soon in the United States, so I suggest you come and take a look at it.
Unless we can figure out a way to really get people behind this thing, because everybody wants one. Everybody was running up to us asking, how much did you pay for it, what kind of gas mileage, and they're very happy with the answers we were giving. Very happy. So we're trying to think of a way to muster all this energy into something positive and convince SMART, which you can see www.smart.com, see the cars for yourself. Convince them that they can actually sell these things in this country. I think they believe that everybody just wants an SUV or a minivan or, you know, has a whole crowd of people to travel with no matter where they go. So, I don't know, with all this support we have now, I think we can maybe make driving fun and interesting and artistic.
And make people on the streets smile a little more.
Yeah, yeah. All right, now you brought some music with you. Why don't you tell us what we have queued up here on the turntable?
Well, the first one we got here is from a miner slash songwriter named Réal V. Benoit. He's from...
How old is he?
Good question. I think he's in his 60s or 70s.
Well, then he's not a miner. Oh, no. In your country, 60s is a miner? I thought we were... Boy, you know, our drinking age is 21. You guys can't drink till you're 60. That sure goes against the image that a lot of people have about Canadians. You know?
Actually, it's the other kind of miner. It's
I am so embarrassed. Oh, my goodness. You mean the kind that go underground?
That's
and not
it.
The kind that go underground like we go underground.
That's right. I actually saw an interview with this guy on TV a while back, and it was a really old interview they were passing again on the TV from the 1950s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually had his miner's helmet with the, you know, those kind of headlights they have on the top of the helmet.
Came straight from work, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And he was doing his interview, and he talks a lot about, you know, what it's like to be a miner, and he has this crazy kind of view on life. Of course, unless you speak French, you won't understand what he's saying. But he actually put his music career on hold to live his life as a miner. And he's done something remarkable, is after all his career, he's decided to come back and tour and play music again and brought all his old success.
So he's gotten the mining out of his system.
I guess so.
I can't imagine that, you know, just wanting to put your life on hold so you can pursue the mining. But I guess if it speaks to you, you got to do it.
Yeah, you do what you love, what you got to do.
Well, digging black stuff out of the ground, if that's what your passion is.
Well, it certainly inspired him into some songwriting.
Okay. Well, we're going to play this, and of course people have no idea what kind of music this is, so I think they might be pleasantly surprised when they actually hear the notes begin. And what's the name of the song?
It's, I think it's Pour le Fun. Basically, he's describing that when you do something for fun, it's fun, but when you do it for real, it's dull.
Ah. Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in that.
That's profound.
Okay, and his name again is?
Réal V. Benoit.
Okay, well, here's some of him on Off the Wall.
L'autre jour, j'ai rencontré un pêcheur professionnel et je lui ai demandé s'il trouva la vie belle. Il répond sans hésiter, la pêche et puis le soleil. C'est bien beau pour s'amuser, seulement pour moi c'est pas pareil. Quand on fait ça pour le fun, c'est le fun. Seulement quand c'est pour de vrai, c'est drôle.
pédales. Le lendemain vers les 9h, je regardais le hockey lorsque je vis l'un des joueurs qu'on allait interroger. À la fin, l'intervieweur lui demande ce que vous savez. Il dit, monsieur l'annonceur, ne vous faites pas d'idée. Quand on fait ça pour le fun, c'est le fun. Seulement quand c'est pour de vrai, c'est drôle. C'est vrai quand c'est pour le fun, c'est le fun. Seulement quand c'est pour de vrai, c'est drôle. Ça fait que d'après ce que je peux voir, c'est pas bien bien compliqué. Tous les métiers de la terre finissent par nous ennuyer. On ne peut jamais rien faire qui puisse nous intéresser, à moins qu'on soit millionnaire et puis qu'on le fasse pour s'amuser. Parce que quand c'est pour le fun, c'est le fun. Seulement quand c'est pour de vrai, c'est drôle. C'est vrai quand c'est pour le fun, c'est le fun. Seulement quand c'est pour de vrai. Parce que quand c'est pour le fun, c'est le fun. Seulement quand c'est pour de vrai.
Hey, that's pretty cool. Not what I was expecting. And his name again was?
Réal V. Benoit.
Okay, from, where's he from?
He's from Rouen, Noranda.
And that's in Quebec.
That's right.
Okay, cool. And that's brought to us by Fred here, who came down from Montreal. I brought that with him in the smart car that he drove down.
Mm-hmm.
And brought some other Canadian music, too, which we'll be listening to a little bit. Is that the right term, Canadian music, or should I be saying French-Canadian? Or?
Well, it's both, because if it's French-Canadian, it's Canadian by definition. But, yeah, it's from the province of Quebec.
Uh-huh. Cool. And Fred here is... someone you might have heard of before. He was one of our artists at the Last Hope Conference, Fifth Hope. You designed the Big Brother posters.
That's right.
Tell us something about that. You do a comic.
That's right. I decided to adapt George Orwell's 1984 into comic book format. And soon after that, well, the first thing I did when I decided to do the comic was draw up the posters. And a friend of mine lent me a copy of Freedom Downtime, which I watched, and that's how I found out about you guys, and I thought, hey, you know, I should send Emmanuel Goldstein a Big Brother poster. I thought that was a good idea, so I shipped it up to you, and you guys got it.
We got it at WBAI. We opened it. We passed out for a little while, came to, and said, wow, you know, we should invite this guy to our conference, and we did, and then you came down and made more posters for us, and the rest is history.
I was amazed. It was all over the place seeing this. It was like 1984 became real.
It was in the New York Times, it was on
it
TV,
was.
It was everywhere.
It's all over the web now, too.
Ingrained in our minds. Can't get it out. So now, what do you have lined up for the future? What kinds of projects are you working on?
Well, that's my main project. I have a couple of other side projects. I'm doing, after doing visual for the Fifth Hope, I got another contract for another conference that's coming up next week in Montreal, which is called Recon. It's a reverse engineering conference. And I'm doing the visuals that you can find on the website for there, which is recon.cx.
Recon.cx. I'm going to go there now, and I'm going to see your artwork. Is that right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. .cx. It's loading up now. Slowly. There it is. Wow, that's pretty scary. That's a great face there. You got a little looks like a schematic inside a head.
What you see there basically is an android.
Uh-huh.
We had the concept of going into seeing the parts of an android, seeing like a person which you could get into the pieces, which is the idea behind reverse engineering, is, you know, playing with things and fiddling and seeing how they work from tearing them apart. And what's interesting is when you switch sections, you see different parts of the robot.
Wow. Well, that's pretty intense there. So recon.cx is the site. Now, tell us about the conference. Can people go to this? Is this open to?
Yeah, it's mainly for people. I'm not involved with the organization of the conference, so I guess the best thing to do is to go on the website and get the information.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds cool. So tell us more about the comic.
Well, The comic book is my personal project. What happened is after I had I was drawing a comic which ended a couple of years ago, and I was looking for a project, and Mary, my girlfriend, was hassling me, saying, you know, you should read 1984. You know, you're interested in so many things that revolve around that, and you haven't read George Orwell's book yet. You know, and you know, George Orwell's made such an impact. I mean, his name has become like a verb, you know, a noun now, Orwellian, and Orwellian, we hear about it all the time.
Absolutely.
So I figured, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to read the book and see what it's all about. And it turns out I love the book. I kept seeing the pictures in my mind when I was reading it, so I thought this would make a great comic book, you know, if only I could, you know, get the rights or something like that. And soon after, I checked it out, and it turns out that his work is in the public domain in Canada.
In Canada?
That's right. It's in the public domain in three countries right now that I know of. That's Canada, Australia, and Russia.
And everywhere else it's...
I've tried to get information on that, but it's very difficult. I've even tried to contact the George Orwell Estate, and I haven't gotten feedback yet.
Uh-huh. They're probably trying to figure it out themselves.
Maybe they're listening right now and would like to contact
me. What are the rules in Tanzania? You know, how do you know these things? It's... God, that's amazing.
I guess you got to get your lawyer to figure it out or something.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know why that should even be such an issue. It's just the comic, I've seen bits of it, and it's just, it's an honor to have something like that documenting your work. And it certainly is in the spirit of the original work.
Well, that was my intent all along, is to adapt it as faithfully as possible, because I've seen a couple of the movies. And the movies are good.
You saw them at Hope, didn't you?
I saw one at Hope, and one that I have never seen anywhere else.
We had to go far and wide and long and everywhere you can imagine to find copies of... there was one film from, I think, 1956 and one from 1954.
That's right. I know. Yes, that's right.
And one had one was an actual American release, which had some bizarre ending, which I think was a happy ending. And one in England, which actually was a live presentation on BBC television... In the 50s, I don't know who taped this or how they did it, but we were able to track down a copy of that and show that as well.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the 1984 version of 1984.
Which is probably the most well-known, which came out in 1984.
It was filmed in 1984 in England, which is exactly where the story is supposed to take place.
Mm.
So that that's pretty fascinating as well. And, of course, the book certainly lives on. I always recommend 1984 to people, not only because I'm named in it, but but because it's such a good book. I mean, that's why I chose a name from that book, because nothing says what it says better than the way it says it, I guess.
And if you don't have time to read a book, you can check out the comic on the website, 1984comic.com. I'll be releasing chapters as they come out.
I'm going there now, too. 1984 comic, and that's singular.
That's right.
.com.
It's one comic.
Okay. And so are you very active in the comic world?
Not very, actually. I published three comic books so far, and I started to go on this venture by myself because, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're working with many people, you know, an inker and an editor, a writer, you don't really get the creative input you would like. So I decided that I'd go out on the limb and try to get this project started by myself so I could get the vision that I wanted out there.
Cool. I went to your site. It looks like a newspaper, actually.
Yes, it's a sort of parody of the Times. We tried to keep up with news articles that are related to pretty much what's going on in the world today, mm-hmm. Pertaining to Big Brother activities, if you will. Everything that goes on with the watchful eyes, the databases.
Anything specific, though, that concerns you? Maybe it's something Canadian. What kind of Orwellian things are going on in Canada?
That's the thing. You see, I mostly know what's going on in the U.S. more than Canada, because I don't have time to watch TV, and I don't get a lot of local news what's going on in Canada.
Mm.
What's going on in the world seems to revolve around the U.S. right now, so I'm mostly focused on, you know, big world affairs like that.
Mm-hmm. So which ones of those are of most concern right now?
Well, you've got the national ID that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
The article that's right on there with the database that was stolen through UPS recently. I think you guys covered that, too.
Yeah, last week on Off the Hook. Yeah, there's all kinds of privacy issues, especially in banks where customer information just gets lost, stolen, or given away.
That's right. And when you listen to the news, you get like there's different ways of seeing the news. That's the way I'm seeing it right now. And after you read 1984, it's like it opens your eyes a lot of on how things work together. It's just what we see in Guantanamo Bay right now. It's amazing that the similarities with this book. And you know, it's a horrible book, you know. I mean, it's a great book, but I mean, it's a horror story in a way, and it ends in a horrible ending, which I think is the type of book that actually, instead of leaving you satisfied and, you know, wanting to go out for ice cream or something, it moves you to act, to do something. Anything you can do, you want to not allow this to keep going on.
Because there are all kinds of symptoms of that kind of oppression all around us in many different forms. It can be in the form of school, it can be in the form of parents, a government, you name it. Or just your friends, even. Orwellian ways of dealing with situations are very commonplace. Rewriting the past, silencing people, making sure that certain things are not remembered or certain people aren't remembered or are remembered in a different way. Just any kind of way where you control speech, where you control thought, where you make people feel a certain way without really knowing why they're feeling a certain way. That manipulation, we see it every day. We see it with the current invasion going on in Iraq. We see it with what's going on in Guantanamo Bay. I was watching a news conference earlier with with all kinds of government people, and Cheney was saying all kinds of crazy things about Guantanamo Bay. And you just realize these people, I think they really do believe what they're saying. I think they do.
You do?
I think they believe it. They believe what they're saying, yes.
I don't know.
There's no hope for them.
Recently, there was a story about Donald Rumsfeld where he denied that they ever went into Iraq. Well, I say they, speaking, you know, about the United States Army, ever going to Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction, which is a perfect example of rewriting history.
Oh, and that's true, but I think he has convinced himself that, yes, that is in fact true. I mean, Reagan was very good at that. Reagan could convince himself that things were very simple. And I'm sure he must have known that they weren't quite as simple as he made them out to be. Bush, pretty much the same. You know, nothing could be that that easy. That, you know, just go in and change something around and everything will work out fine. You know it's got to be more complicated than that. You know there's going to be ramifications. In this particular case, though, Gitmo is very interesting because people are talking about it now. And the reason they're talking about it is because it's become a story. Time magazine has decreed it's a story. They printed an article about it, I think, this week. And now, all of a sudden, it's an issue. It shows how the media is a part of this. The media manipulates people just as much as the government and makes them focus on a particular aspect of what's happening. And if they don't do that, the people don't focus on it.
That's right.
So now people are calling for Guantanamo Bay to be closed. 2 weeks ago, a lot of people didn't even know where it was or what it was doing.
I hear there are a lot of other places than Guantanamo Bay also.
Yeah, throughout. Even in the United States, there are places behind barbed wire where you know, nobody knows what's going on inside. They have detainees. It's just incredible to me to be able to turn on the TV set and listen to Rumsfeld and Cheney talk about these people in Guantanamo Bay being held and calling them the worst of the worst. You know, these are the people that you want to be protected against, and yet they're unable to charge them with anything. You know, they're guilty, but we can't find anything they're guilty of, but we know they're guilty, and you're safe because they're here.
I'd like to know how they know that.
We'd like to know how their minds work, for sure. But yeah, that's a little bit of Orwellian thought for you. It's out there in all sorts of forms. Hey, we have some more music that you brought down from Montreal.
That's right. This is from an artist who's well known, actually, in Quebec.
Mm-hmm. And what's his name?
His name is Jean Leloup.
Okay.
Which, basically, you could say in English, John the Wolf.
John the Wolf. I like that.
That's right.
And is he a miner, too?
No. He's been a musician all his life, and he has a few albums out, I think four or five. And I don't have the whole collection. But, yeah, he's had some wide work out there.
Now, is this music that gets played on radio? up there?
That's the thing. I don't listen much to radio. I find listening to what my friends have to say is more interesting, and buying the CDs and going out and getting that kind of music, because I find radio is way too pop or way too rock and not my style.
But is it the same kind of music that we listen to down here on the radio, or is there a whole culture up there of lousy music that people listen to on every radio station?
We get all the your American groups up here. You know, we listen, we hear, you know, Britney Spears, all that kind of thing, you know.
I'm so sorry. I wish there was something I could do.
It's out there.
Run her over with the smart car or something, but we'll have to think of something. I wonder if that's happened yet. Has anyone been run over by one of those things?
Haven't heard of it.
They died with a smile on their face, I'll bet.
It probably hurt their knee or something.
Okay, so what are we going to listen to here?
Which track are we playing now?
Track number 4, I believe.
Okay, I guess we'll have to play it, and I'll tell you which track it is afterwards, because I don't know by heart which title it is.
But it's one of the clean ones, right?
That's right, it's
okay,
clean.
That's the important thing. That's all we're about here, is
it's
cleanliness.
Safe for your children's ears.
All right, and on Off the Wall, the artist again is?
Jean Leloup.
All right, we'll be back.
From
right
Montreal.
After. From Montreal. We'll return in just a moment.
Devrais-je partir ou bien rester?
Okay, and that was called La Chambre, right?
That's right.
And this is Jean Leloup?
That's right. It means the room.
Jean Leloup means the room?
No, Jean Leloup
is... La Chambre. I know
that's
that.
That's right. There you go.
The chamber. Yeah. La Salle... Wait. No, La Salle de Bain means bathroom, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Hmm. Why is that salle, not chamber?
Salle is like a room, if you will.
And chambre is also...
Chambre is like a chambre. Bedroom.
Okay, I get it. I get it. And that's music from Montreal.
That's right.
It was brought down here by Fred, also from Montreal.
Yes.
Who drove down in the smart car. Currently here at Stony Brook, and I imagine there's a bunch of people on their way over right now to look at the smart car. In fact, when we drove up before, there were people passing by, and they had a big smile on their face.
You always get a crowd with this car.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You actually, there was one time, I remember, we were on the street, and you said, look... no one's come up yet. And I said, Emmanuel, look behind you.
And they were on their way.
There was already some people there.
Wow. That's unbelievable. We were driving yesterday in Brooklyn, and I was in the van. We were driving two vehicles. You were in the smart car. I was in the 2600 van. Usually the 2600 van gets people waving and smiling. Not anymore. It's been usurped. Yeah. And I looked in my rearview mirror, and I see this guy who was in the car behind you. He's gotten out of his car. He's having this nice conversation with you, saying, oh, my goodness, where is this thing? How do you get this? And then he starts taking pictures of it. And, of course, everybody behind him is getting really infuriated because the lights turn green, and he's there taking pictures of this car. But it just shows you how people, their common sense goes out the window when they see this thing.
It's instant celebrity status.
Absolutely.
I find people in New York are so nice because they're always waving and smiling and coming up to you and talking.
We've had a few people just walk up to it, though, silently and just stare straight at it while you're
That's
in it.
That's right. There's some expressions of confusion also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen a few stockbroker-looking types of people that sort of had a concerned look on their face, like they're asking, is this going to affect me in a bad way? Am I going to somehow be paying more money for something because of this thing?
Should I get my stocks out of petrol now?
Oh, boy. Well, anyway, it's a ton of fun, and we've basically spent the last few days playing around with that, but also, it's, like I said before, everything happens at once. Not only am I working on the summer issue of the magazine, not only am I filling out all kinds of visa applications for going away this summer, and boy, what a pain that is, the applications, not the going away, but somehow I got pulled into a movie. Made by some friends, and I got to tell you, I talked about this a little bit last week. I had no idea what to expect. Having done this over the past weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, my life has been transformed by this. I mean, it's just the whole acting thing is unbelievable. It's so much fun. It really is. And I have to basically define what that particular meaning of fun is, because it involves some suffering. It involves being in a hot room for many hours. It involves doing the same thing many times.
Actually,
I think
it was
waking up early.
I think it was cooler down there than outside this weekend.
That's the other thing. Yeah, of course, we had this amazing heat wave, which is still going on here. But we did the filming for this particular movie in the basement of a club. Actually, the club is in the basement, and we were down there basically just filming different scenes. And in fact, the first scene I filmed was me getting killed, which is kind of cool, actually. I've never been killed before, and I got to get killed in a bathroom.
How'd you get killed, exactly?
I got stabbed by this little kid with an electric fork or something. It's the most bizarre thing I think I've ever read or heard, which means it's got to be cool. I had to, do all kinds of death throws and things like that. And the most interesting part about that was, since I was playing some kind of a mobster, I had a gun on me.
What was your name again?
I don't know what my name actually is. I'm just known as the Outside Man. And, I guess there's an inside man, there's an outside man, but there's no middleman.
That's
Maybe
right.
Maybe that's what it's all about. Who knows? We'll have to reveal it when the
no
film comes out.
No one knows who the middleman is.
But the thing is, when I fell backwards, and of course this didn't happen in sequence. It took an hour or so to get all this to happen, but when I fell backwards, I'm supposed to pull my gun out of my pocket and fire it into the air. Now, of course, we don't fire real guns, we fire blanks, but they're still very loud. And in fact, whenever we fired something, people had to put earplugs in their ears and be warned. Now, nobody else had to fire a gun in a bathroom. Now, I don't know if you've ever done anything loud in the bathroom, but it's about three times louder normally. And this was 100 times louder, and I had to do it twice.
Well, it was extremely loud when people were shooting off guns in the main room, in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
We were covering our ears, we had the earplugs, and it was loud. Mm-hmm. You could hear it very well. And I imagine there must have been an extremely loud echo in there when you were door closed too.
Well, I had the things in my ears, but the second I hit that trigger, my ears were ringing immediately, and they stayed that way for a little while. I mean, you know,
it was a dangerous shot too. I thought I saw you were bleeding when you came out.
Well, I you know, I fell down a little bit, but you know, I kind of cut myself on one of the objects in the bathroom, but that's. It's, you know, you have to get into the role. You have to get into the whole spirit of the thing. And I, you know, when you're dead, bleeding is kind of incidental. So, but no, they were very concerned about that. It's like, I wanted to use it in the shot. I wanted to use the blood. And they were more concerned with stopping the bleeding, which, you know, I guess is the responsible thing to do. But still, I got to say, I'm just in love with the whole thing. The whole thing of just acting. And, you know I'm not an actor. I know I'm not good at it. And I'm honored to even be in the same room with a lot of these people. Some of the actors there were simply unbelievable.
Impressive.
They were so good. They were so good. And just being able to work alongside them, and they were the nicest people in the world. They really were. It was just such an honor seeing it being made and just hanging out this weekend. Now, of course, I had so many other things I had to be doing, so now I have to be you know, working twice as hard, but it's worth whatever sacrifice. And I'd probably do it again in a heartbeat if the opportunity ever arose. But wow. So yeah, you know, if that film comes out anytime in the near future, we'll certainly let you know about it, unless I'm so bad in it that I don't want anybody to see it. Which, you know, after reading my lines over the past several days, you know, I can't believe they want me in there, you know, because I keep thinking, no, I shouldn't have said it that way, I should have said it some other way. But there's so little I know about the whole profession. So you got to see a film being made. In fact, you were out there sketching people as we were doing it.
That's right. Well, the first day of shooting, you know, it sounds exciting, a movie, and it is very exciting when you're shooting the scene. But in between scenes, it gets very long. So I brought along a sketch pad and, you know, got some sketches of the different actors and characters that were mm-hmm. in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's a friend of yours who's playing in there, isn't there?
There's several friends of mine. You mean who? Inside Man?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Fiber Optic. That's right. Right. Fiber Optic is in this movie as well. And it was great hanging out and just doing our lines back and forth. So yeah, this is one of those magical weeks. Smart car, movie, friends from Montreal, and a lot of good food too. We went to a lot of good places. You've been raving
Excellent.
About the food of New York.
I've been surprised because last time I went to the States, I was in San Diego, and we had a hard time finding some good food.
You can't find food in San Diego after 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried. I mean, you can find it at Denny's, and that's about the best you're going to do.
I once had some greasy chickens. It was so greasy, mm-hmm. I couldn't eat more than one at a time before I had to clean my hands before to pick another one. It was ridiculous. But here, the food has been exquisite. We mm-hmm. went to a sushi spot, a French spot, a mm-hmm. Peruvian place.
Peruvian place. That was the first for me, too.
Yeah.
Did you go to the Ethiopian place? No, you didn't go to the Ethiopian
no.
place. Well, we've just been to a lot of cool places, an Italian place. Yeah, well, New York has so many things. And we've been basically in the same area of New York, too. That's only one tiny community. There's so many places to go. It's just too bad you're only here for a week or so.
That's right.
But for those of you who are in New York, you know, take advantage. You've got some amazing things here. And I speak to you people on Long Island, too, because you can get there so easily. The rest of the world, you know, they long for this kind of thing. They're so envious. And here it is, right in our own backyard. So, yeah, a lot of fun. We're not going to talk about Michael Jackson, are we? We just don't have time.
Who?
Yeah, Michael Jackson was acquitted yesterday. And, well, that's that. You know, that's the end of that story. we'll see if there's any more that comes out of that. But I figured he'd be acquitted. I really did. And I learned about it by watching a French TV station, too.
That's right. We learned it on Canadian TV.
I was watching Canadian TV with you last night, and we saw it in French.
Michael Jackson a été acquitté.
Yeah, and I knew what it meant. Okay, so what I'm doing now is I'm going through the newswire to see if anything interesting is happening. Okay, here we go. Add larceny to the charges that an army mechanic is already facing for refusing to accompany his unit for another tour in Iraq. The army says Sergeant Kevin Benderman accepted nearly $3,000 in unearned combat pay while remaining at Fort Stewart, Georgia, The charges were added despite an investigator's finding that an accounting error was to blame and that Benderman shouldn't be charged with larceny. Isn't that interesting? Benderman's lawyer calls the new charges an outrage, saying up to 100 soldiers received money improperly and his client is the only one facing discipline for it. Benderman was already due to stand trial for refusing to return to Iraq in January, days after saying he wanted a discharge as a conscientious objector. You know, there are so many people over there now who are objecting to what they're doing. So many people here who are objecting to what they're doing. Do you know the guy who was responsible? I don't know his name off the top of my head, but the member of Congress who was responsible for making French fries into freedom fries in the cafeteria at the House of Representatives, he now is opposed to the war. He wants to bring people home. I don't know if he actually has gone so far as to say that he's going to call them French fries again, but maybe he actually sees the wisdom of the French, you know, and... Yeah, and that was an interesting noise. I think we went off the air for a second. I heard static in my ears. So, well, there's not much I can do from this chair, but it might have something to do with that alarm that's going off. Let's see if that alarm is still sounding. Yes, maybe it has something to do with that when we're off the air, or if somebody out there knows what's going on, please let us know here at the station. yeah, it's also 150 degrees outside, so... But anyway, yeah, The anti-war, movement is building in various ways. What do they think in Canada? I mean, Canada never supported the war. The government of Canada never did. What do the people think? What do they say?
Well, we think it's a stupid war, basically, because we have yet to see any link with Iraq. Well, you know, I guess it's not news, but, you know, we don't know what the United States are doing in Iraq. You know...
Oh, you think we do? We don't have the slightest idea what's going on over there. We just go over there and shoot things and regroup.
That's right. You know, we get a different kind of news than you do. You know, we get different channels, and there's a lot of questioning going around. And I don't know where to start with this. It's so mind-boggling what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, your new Prime Minister, Paul Martin, seems to want to be friends with the United States a lot more than Chrétien wanted to be.
I don't know about that, but he seems to be very, very friendly with your Georgie.
Now, why? I don't understand that. What's? I mean, is it a trade thing? Is it just you're afraid of us?
Well, I think Canada depends a lot on the United States for a lot of the imports and exports that goes around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, you want to have... Well, it's like anybody. You want good relations with your neighbors, don't you?
But if that's the case, wouldn't you be polite and go to the same wars?
Well, I don't think... I think if my neighbors would start shooting off guns everywhere, I'd want to move.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when you're dealing in countries, it's not that easy.
No, Canada can't move, that's for sure. Well, where do you see it all going? I mean, this invasion has resulted in chaos over there. I don't see it ending anytime soon.
Well, I see a lot of propaganda that's going on in the U.S. media, but at the same time, I hear a lot of good things. I hear a lot of people that are waking up to what's happening. Basically, people asking questions, you know, like, why are we here? There's a lot of people who have deserted, you've mentioned.
6,000 last year.
Yeah, that's a lot. And Noam Chomsky's even mentioned that this was the first time that there was massive protests before the war actually took off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we haven't seen before. So I think sooner or later, there's enough people that are going to wake up that they won't be able to just keep doing what they're doing mindlessly. You know,
I think what's afflicting a lot of the anti-war people is the sensation that nothing is being accomplished, that they're not winning, that they're not getting anywhere. And I think that's playing into the hands of the people that control things.
Well, we go back to Orwell then. You know, it's a perpetual warfare. When you're fighting terrorists, when do you know when you're done fighting? You know, there's no ticker tape parade I once heard.
Mm-hmm.
There's never going to be an end to this.
Right, right. It's scary times we live in, but, you know, I feel a lot more confident with people like you around drawing the comics and speaking out and just being an artist, being individual.
Well, I draw comics, so I try to put my talent to work.
Mm-hmm. You get much feedback?
Yes, I do, actually. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of good feedback. We once went posting Big Brother posters down the Saint-Laurent Main Street in Montreal, and there was this girl that came up to us while we were sticking the posters up to a wall. And she was ecstatic. It was like, I'm so glad that people are doing things like this. It's so amazing. And especially when you have like the whole media speaking in one voice, it's like the media is militarized now. The whole media speaking in one voice, that if you don't have alternative voices, you think everybody thinks like the media. You think that you're the one who's crazy and you're isolated. And I think that's the main danger, is to think you're isolated. So that's why I wanted to get this out. I wanted to, you know, make it relive in a sense, you know. It's not going to be a huge twist and turns, but I think new people need to hear about this. New people need to read this book. It's a very important book, and I don't say this lightly.
The address again for people to actually view this.
The comic can be found on www.1984comic.com.
And there's a way to reach you on there as well.
That's right. My email's on there.
Okay.
All contact information.
Well, Fred, I want to thank you so much for coming down from Montreal, for bringing the smart car, for bringing your comics and your sketching abilities, and just being here today as well.
Thank you.
And I believe you'll be on Off the Hook tomorrow in addition.
Looking forward to it.
We're going to go out with another song by Jean Leloup. This is called Pigeon, I believe?
Pigeon, yes.
All right. This is one of your favorites, I think.
I love it.
All right. Emmanuel Goldstein, we'll see you here again next week. Have a good night.
Quel incroyable travail.